Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is the perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life, there's no surrender. There's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through. We are the ones who will never be broken. With our final breath, we'll fight to the death. We are soldiers, we are soldiers.
Guests as well as the folks in the chat participation.
And you can find that show Monday through Friday from 8 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time. And also, I'd like to thank everyone who's coming in tonight, whether you are coming from Blog Talk Radio or you are listening live from the Bard's Logic Political Talk website. And it would be great if folks went to visit there. You could find some archive shows, some articles, some videos, and things of that nature in some of these things I am promoting. So go there. It's easy to find. Just go to the homepage on Blog Talk Radio of Bard's Logic Political Talk, and you will find the link to the Bard's Logic Political Talk website. And tonight we are going to have part two, or a continuing discussion that we did last night. And if you missed last night's show, go ahead and get a follow-up by going to last night's archive. You can find that on the homepage of Blog Talk Radio, excuse me, pretty much with the same title of tonight, except missing the part two aspect of it. And so we will be continuing on Bard's Logic, the discussion on the 2012 election season, current events, and with only 23 days left until election, we'll talk about that and the days beyond. We'll also discuss how America has gotten to this point with our economy and with our politics and our foreign relations. And also we will talk about the presidential candidates, what was not said in the debates, continue on with Middle East conflict, QE3, the China trade deals around the world, and other topics such as an article that someone brought in tonight we will discuss. But I won't kill all the surprise by talking more about it. So at this time, and without further ado, I will bring in one of the panelists of the Bard's Logic Political Talk, and that is Chris. Chris, your mic is live. Thank you for coming in. What's on your mind?
Well, I don't know, man. Lots of stuff. I was thinking about everything that we were talking about and going to talk about, and then I just saw this new article that Randy just posted about 35 reasons why you're an idiot if you don't vote for Romney. And that just kind of like, I was like, oh, boy, there's one I'd love to tear apart.
Well, you know, there's got to be, I mean, you know that would be coming. You know what I mean? You know that would be coming.
Yeah, but it's really cool that they outline it in the 35 bullet points that you can go down one by one by one and tear it apart.
And that should definitely be interesting to see. And just said, I just received the article as well, so maybe we could go down the bullet points at some point. Or if you'd like to start off with that, go ahead.
Well, we can get actually. Randy wants to write an article against this, so we can come back to this when he shows up finally. Actually, what I'd like to do just for fun, because I mean we got great conversations going on here. These bullet points of things that we started on last night and barely touched is great conversation, and we can just keep rolling along and just have fun as we go and take the turn, you know, just see where the road leads us. But I wanted to quote something. Chuck Baldwin was a 2008 Constitution Party presidential candidate, and he actually has a long career in the Republican Party, including very close to Reagan, and left the Republican Party. And I was actually looking at a video that I found. Somebody posted something, and I pulled the video up, and I started watching it, and it was just incredible because it was Ron Paul hosting in 2008 a press conference for the third-party candidates. And a lot of people don't understand this, but, you know, they always think of, you know, Ron Paul ran as a libertarian back in, whatever, 1690 or something. But a lot of people don't understand this, but Ron Paul, when he left the presidential race or primary, actually endorsed the Constitutional Party candidate, Chuck Baldwin. Little things you learn, you know, along the journey. Some people would say, oh, yeah, I knew that. Well, I didn't know that. And I mean, I knew it a month ago, but it was new to me. And I wanted to read this quote. I think it's a great quote to start off tonight. And, you know, wherever we go, this quote is perfect. the Republican Party is no longer fixable. The two major parties have not only a monopoly, but a stranglehold on the political process that is choking the lifeblood out of our country. I have said it throughout this campaign that the real issue is not between liberals and conservatives, not between the Republicans and Democrats. It's between the globalists and the constitutionalists. That. He nailed it. That's it. That's the quote.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. Yeah, because I was remember some of my political science courses that I've taken, is they talked a lot about how the non-governmental organizations and the corporations, the multinational corporations, would actually take over the position of governments in the wielding of power and the controlling of people and the controlling of populations. And I think we are well on our way towards that.
You want some history behind that? Sorry.
No, go ahead.
A lot of people don't understand this.
I'm done with my soliloquy.
I'm sorry.
I'm kidding, man. Go ahead.
There's this thing that people don't understand about the Second World War and what happened right after the Second World War. And I'm sure Randy will chime in on this, and you may have covered some of this in your political studies. But the Second World War was brutal. I mean, people talk about the industrial age of America after the war. Well, yeah, because the rest of the world had been blown apart. We had no competition for a long time. Part of the Reconstruction era of the Second World War, well, one of the first things politically that happened was our president at the time said to the English and everybody else, get the hell out of the world. You're no longer going to control the world market. And that also included pulling back the British pound sterling, which was the trade dollar of the world. And we took it over. We took all the gold back. And we set up the U.S. dollar as the trade dollar for the world, including the oil trade dollar. And there was another thing. This also goes back to a similar conversation when all the power brokers of the world got together in Jekyll Island and created the Fed. And they also set the implementation for the 16th and 17th Amendment, which for some people don't understand. They should read that, but they need to understand. That was the beginning of the income tax. That was the beginning of the end of your personal freedoms and the total takeover of America, paid for by you through income tax and a tax that nobody talks about except Ron Paul and maybe some of our constitutional friends, that the inflationary tax. And so, we have a dollar today that's worth less than 1% of what it was when the Fed was formed. Now, those same types of globalist, corporationist bankers and the major corporations of the world got together at the end of the Second World War and said, okay, we just defeated all the enemies of the world. We just blew the crap out of the world, and now it needs to be rebuilt. One of the theories, and I have heard you talk about this, but one of the theories was if we combine the world economy between all of the nations of the world, nobody will be able to launch a world war, because if they do, it will hurt them. There was actual strategy to tying the world economy together under the U.S. dollar, and it was led by the United States government and these bankers and corporations to try to make a one world type of, for lack of a better term, new world order. Okay, and it wasn't maybe as sinister as some of the conspiracy theory people like to talk about today. It was an actual plan to make the world a better place. Maybe their hearts were in it, maybe the motives were correct, but it has led to what we have today, because man is corrupt, man is greedy. Rulers are terrible people that get control of countries. And so we have the mess we have today. But this whole thing was set in motion coming out of the Second World War. Now it's evolved and morphed. You had the United Nations. Before that, they had, what was it called, the Foreign um, the first one that failed. I'm sorry. My brain just stopped. But basically, you know, all these things have been set in motion. You know, a lot of people get confused at the little details of what's going on today. You know, why are we in the Middle East? What are we doing? You know, why is China and Russia striking back? Why are all these trade deals being made that are no longer using the U.S. dollar? I mean, this is all an evolution that comes from things set in motion in the Second World War. And, of course, you know, somebody else could tie that together back to 1913 and the Fed. But
right. Well, and
nothing
also
new is under the sun.
Hmm? And also tying in, I have a gentleman on who needs no introduction. He is the host of Constitutional Conservatives Unite that you can also find on Blog Talk Radio. I believe tonight the show will be from 11 p.m. Onward. And I will bring on at this time Samuel Sanford. Sammy, thank you very much for calling, and how are you?
Oh, we're hanging in there, Robert. And
it's an honor to have you on, sir.
Thank you. And what Chris is, and what all y'all are talking about is so true and so awesome. And, Chris, were you trying to think about the League of Nations? Was that what you were trying to think?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I had what I call a brain fart.
I mean, it was a complete failure. The United Nations is a complete failure. I mean, they're the most anti-American organization out there. And I don't know why we fund them and let them have a building on U.S. property, which is a bunch of garbage. But you're nailing it right there on the head, Chris.
And you notice, and this is something that could very well be telling, is did you notice that of the large buildings, some of the largest buildings in New York, it was the United Nations building that was not touched by the terrorists? Just thought I'd throw that out there.
Yeah, I agree. And look at it right now. The building is being renovated right now. Who was paying for the renovation? The U.S. taxpayer. Why are we paying for its renovation and having all the asbestos ripped out? They're doing asbestos abatement in the building right now and renovating it. As far as I'm concerned, they can leave the asbestos in there. It can take care of some of our problems.
Yeah. Understood, Sammy. Understood.
It's too slow, Sammy.
Yeah, I agree with you. It seems low. But Chris is nailed on the head about the bankers and everything and about what happened at Jekyll Island, which is about 40 miles from me. I have been to Jekyll Island many times. It's a beautiful island, but the treasonous deals that were made there, it just blows my mind.
You know, and about us funding, you know, putting so much money into the United Nations, at least in my opinion, you know, here's an analogy, and I think it's an apt one, is the United States paying all this money into the United Nations is like a fetus giving money to an abortion doctor.
Exactly.
I mean, there's an analogy for that.
That was really heavy.
Analogy.
What's that?
That was really heavy.
Yeah. Well, it is. But I mean, really, if you really take the two circumstances and see how unfriendly the United Nations is to the United States. Then, I mean, the United Nations itself, I mean, its very existence is about taking away the sovereignty of a nation.
Well, here's what's funny, though, Robert. We fund it. Our
right,
government
yeah,
and many people in our government, including our bankers, want this to happen. That's the part. So when we say we, I really think that it is an enemy to us, the citizens
right.
of America and people who are constitutionally minded and who want American sovereignty and respect America for what it was, is, and could be. And you know, the problem is many of those people at the top of the tier and the power brokers and politicians don't want America the way it is. That's the sad, that's the bad part, you know.
Well,
they could walk us out of the United Nations in a heartbeat. Doesn't take that big of a, Randy can probably explain it politically, how simple it actually is.
And Chris, you know, the one thing about it, the United Nations Human Rights Council, do y'all know who is chairing that committee now?
It's a terrorist nation, isn't it?
It's Iran, I think, if I remember, somebody from Iran, which is unbelievable. How can Iran have anything to say about human rights? I mean, it blows my mind. They have no human rights in Iran.
Thus, back to my analogy.
Yep. And I just, go live in the Middle East for 6 months or a year, and you will see what goes on over there. I've lived in Egypt. I've been to Saudi Arabia. I have been to Abu Dhabi. And I see these human rights. You have no rights. When I lived in Alexandria, on every major intersection, there was a soldier with an AK-47 standing on the corner.
Well,
I mean, I just, but this is what's coming to America if we don't change it.
Well, we just about have that right now. Our police force are outfitted like military now.
Agreed.
In our own country.
Agreed.
You know? I mean, at the situation, you look at any kind of situation where there's protests, and it looks like a military force. It's not a police force, you know.
Well, yeah, and when
it's a high-tech military. Go ahead.
And Chris, when I was in, when Rex and Tex and me and Jeff Foxworthy and his awesome wife were down there in Tampa, and being in Tampa on the day that they illegally changed the rules to the Republican Party and forced me out, and you were on the show as we were broadcasting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could not believe all the Homeland Security, state police, county police. They were swarming everybody. There was a Ron Paul parade. I think you probably remember me talking about that. Came right by the place where I was broadcasting from. There was probably, I don't know, 2,000 or 3,000 Ron Paul people. There was probably 100 police or Homeland Security in front, and there was probably 500 in the back. Why were they worried about these Ron Paul people? I mean, they were there to intimidate them.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know if you've seen the articles that have flown around the groups, but there was an article where somebody was like, the TSA was, you know, body patting people down at a Romney rally. What the hell's the TSA got to do with a Romney rally?
Right.
I mean,
agreed.
Police state, come on, folks. It's here. It was here the moment.
Don't they already have Secret Service protection?
Yeah, but
yes,
I guess they need to make sure they fondle you, too. That way you're intimidated beyond all.
Well, so they need to fondle you before they get you without lube. I digress. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, you got to understand that, you know, I remember the thing that sparked our conversation last night was the interview, you know, the video that I sent over to you. But one of the guys said in the interview, this Lindsay fella said that basically what the powers that be learned when they enacted QE3 was the most important thing they could have learned about the American people is we will not revolt. They just basically purchased every piece of property, every banknote, every security behind every loan in America that gives us one of the most key components of our basic constitution, and that's the right to own property, and they'll be coming after your tools of industry too, because that's another step of what makes American great and makes Americans free, is that you have the right to own your own property, and you also have the right to own what you invent that makes production, you know, more, you know, whatever it may be, the cotton mill, you know, anything that you invent, you know, in the patent process, that's also property. When they can, but the QE3 buying these mortgage-backed securities at $40 billion a month is designed so that at the end of this QE Infinity program, the government will be the holder of all property behind every loan in America that has anything to do with property. And the guy said in the video, he said, what they learned is that Americans are going to let this all happen without a peep while they're busy watching the bullcrap, you know, sci-fi reality game show thing that we call a presidential race.
And let me interject this, and please don't take this wrongly. The second worst president of the United States of America, Jimmy Carter, I will give him credit for one thing. He would not print money, and he raised the prime interest rate to astronomical.
Well, I don't know if I'd give him credit. I agree with what you're saying, but I don't know if I'd give him credit as much as the Fed wouldn't let him.
The Fed, yeah, okay, yeah, okay, okay. The Fed, you're right, Chris. I mean, I need to correct that. You're 100% right. But back under the second worst president, and we know who the first worst president this country has ever had, it is Barack Obama.
Yep.
But
well, we live in crazy times, guys.
Yes, we do. I mean, but back then, he would not print money to pay for the debt. But also, though, Jimmy Carter was not running high deficits, which Barack Obama is doing. Like, what is it, about $1.25 trillion or trillion and a half, something like that? I mean, it is astronomical. He's running a deficit like that every year. And if you people out there say that Mitt Romney's going to do any different, you're lying to yourself. And that's the reason we need a good president. Go good.
We need something.
Yeah.
I just put a bunch of quotes in a row underneath the quote that I did of Chuck Baldwin, and I threw a couple of them in the chat. You know, it was just some interesting stuff. We're going to try to get him on one of these shows. He was the guy that ran in 2008 for the Constitutional Party that Ron Paul actually endorsed. And some of these quotes are just awesome. Yeah, no, we need something. I've never seen people so apathetic. I've never seen people so... God, I hate insulting people, but they just give me so much material. Stupid things that people say. You know, without any regard to what Romney will represent. I mean, we just went through McCain. I mean, we went through Bush, and then we all kind of recovered from that and went, ouch, that hurt, really hurt the Republican Party, really hurt conservatism. You know, we had the little blip of the Tea Party successes, and then we had, you know, control of the House and Senate. Then we had Obama. Then we had the House has been in control, Boehner and his I don't even know what to call them anymore, you know, rollovers.
Boehner boobs.
Oh, my God. And to hear what people are saying about Romney and why people need to vote for him, I'm like,
oh, yeah, we'll get to that at some point tonight. Oh, yeah, the article, 35 Reasons You Are an Idiot If You Don't Vote for Romney. I mean, and I've looked through some of these lists, and we could go through them later. But I'm like, okay, I can nix that one. I can nix this one. You can get on the line and give reasonings why, you know, what their statement or actually it's a question isn't true. And actually some of the same things that they're saying about Obama here in this list of questions, you know, is you could say the same thing with detail about Romney. So
yeah. Well, it seems like everybody wants to erase the fact that he was a governor of Massachusetts and enacted more liberal agendas in Massachusetts than Obama's been able to get away with on a national level. I mean, am I like living in an alternate universe that other people don't live in? Sometimes I think I am.
Well, and Chris, this is what they try to tell me. I'm sure you're probably hearing. I mean, I block all these people when they try to tell me, oh, but we got to get Mitt Barack Obama out of there. And so I'm going to hold my nose and vote for Mitt Romney, even though he was my first, second, or third choice. But I'm going to vote for him.
I have a cold blast of reality. He ain't my last choice either.
And, Chris, you know what I have said on my show for months, and Robert definitely knows. Robert has been on my show since probably the end of February. He was on my show almost every night. And I have told everybody out there that I would never vote for Mitt Romney, plain and simple.
Yes, I'm here, and then people seem – that's correct. And then people seem so shocked. People seem so shocked that we're voting for – yeah, like – they're like, what? They asked me, so Robert, are you still supporting third parties? And I said, yes, I am. I said, because I said I will not vote for Mitt Romney and I will not vote for Barack Obama. What part of that do the folks not understand? I said, this is what I'm not going to do. I'm not doing it. And I'm like, how can you rail on someone like Mitt Romney for so long? And then turn around and be like, oh, well, we got to vote for him. He's going to be the savior. He's the one who's going to save us from Obama. And I'm thinking, I mean, I've even had people tell me that God told them that I've seen these signs. That's why I need to vote for Romney. And I'm like,
what, pentagrams?
That's an insult to pagans all around the world. No, but
okay. Yeah, but, how about the Masonic Lodge sign? Have they seen that one?
Don't get me started on it. Well, gentlemen, I believe we have someone else calling in.
Is that madman on yet?
He may want to chime in. Yeah, it might be a madman, may not. We'll find out how mad the person is when I open up the mic. So without further ado, I think I'll bring in the madman himself. Is this Randy?
did I let the cat out of the bag or what?
Hey, you brought it now.
Go ahead, guys.
We are going to make, they just gave us the fuel to make the next 4 days of Facebook and Twitter sing by giving us this article.
Oh, my gosh. Go ahead. I know. I believe that this article was shared by you, Randy. Am I correct in that statement?
Yeah, it showed up. I was actually on a group called the Illinois Conservatives, and I was posting about our our only candidate that's actually on the ballot, Dale Dorch, whom a few of you guys have interviewed mm-hmm. and stuff. And he just got an official endorsement from an organization called the Illinois Conservatives. And I thought, hey, what a better place to post than to post this endorsement on a Facebook group called Illinois Conservatives. So I was there, and then I just kind of scrolled down there, and I wish I just wouldn't look at all, you know. I couldn't help it because, you know, the picture caught my attention. I'm like, oh, man, really? And then saw the title, you know, 35 Things, Reasons Why You're an Idiot If You Don't Vote for Romney. And so I went to the article just to see what they were posting. And what was really bizarre was how many of those specifically pertained to Romney himself. And so I'm thinking, you know,
exactly.
I was just if people would understand this just even a little bit, it would be a little bit of a different story. But then I'm thinking, you know, and I posted on my thing, I'm thinking about writing an article called 35 Reasons Why You're a Traitor If You Vote for Either Romney or Obama.
Oh, God, yes. Hey, you know what? We should start a petition at the bottom of it or set it up so that we can post responses to it, because I was reading some of the responses to this article just going, oh, my God, and you call yourself a Republican?
You know. Well, you know what's interesting.
Or conservative, for that matter.
What was real interesting, I just posted on your group there, Chris, the Coalition of Freedom, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. My brain's frying. I just posted there a link to a video of Michael Peruca, who was our 2004 presidential nominee for the Constitution Party. And towards the last part of it, I was going to cut some of it out because he was advertising his Institute on the Constitution, and I just wasn't all that, you know, that wasn't part of what I wanted on there. But it went in to talk about how the Constitution Party is actually the Republican Party. And not Republican in the capital R, but Republican in that we understand that these United States of America is a republic, and therefore we are Republican with a little r in that nature. And, you know, it's really interesting when you really understand all of these things that are, you know, and do the research. And so actually on my group, my personal group, I posted because there was I'd been commenting on this one particular post that came into my group called Randy Constitutional Evangelist Stufflebeam. I actually have a group as well as my profile that's named that. And in that particular group, there was this posting that just kept going on, and he'd just come back and repost on it about Romney. We have to vote for Romney. We have to vote for Romney. And so, you know, I just had just got fed up with it. I'm like, and so I posted this. I said, I am seriously getting fed up with all this Romney is going to save these United States of America crap. I'm so pissed off that you think he's pro-life, pro-family, pro-constitution when everything he has said before and most of what he has said during his campaign indicates otherwise. I have done my research. I mean, seriously, and I've done my research. I refuse to be blinded by fear. I will stand on principle, and I will stand against those who continue the destruction of our country, regardless of how much more slowly they may be doing it than another person.
Amen.
Then Chris posted on his group and, you know, talked about, you know, what's going to happen after November 7th. And so I posted this, and I said, what angers me more than this predilection to cater to fear is the fact that most of these people will completely disappear on November the 7th, and we won't be hearing for them for another 4 years until they try shoving more garbage down our throat.
And speaking of Romney, if you gentlemen and ladies who are listening would bear with me, I have a 1-minute, 4-second audio clip that gives a little insight into Mitt Romney.
Now, Romney's all-day bus tour made a stop in Worcester this afternoon, where supporters gathered to cheer him on and rally the troops to get out the vote. Voter turnout is expected to decide this race, with a large turnout expected to help Romney. With that in mind, the campaign has set up 38 phone banks and targeted 150,000 undecided and unenrolled voters to receive phone calls. Many Democrats say a tie in the polls gives the edge to Shannon O'Brien because she has that statewide organization, including union and minority support. But the Romney campaign says that support is overrated and is eroding. They point to the recent endorsement from El Mundo, the largest Spanish-speaking newspaper in the state.
I think the old, standby definitions of who votes for which party have been blown away in this campaign. I think people recognize that I'm not a partisan Republican, that I'm someone who is moderate, and that my views are progressive, and that I'm going to go to work for our senior citizens, for people who've been left behind by urban schools that are not doing the right job, and so they're going to vote for me regardless of the party label.
Progressive in his own words.
Exactly.
Yeah, but he's changed.
Would that be his underwear? No, I'm not going to go there.
but he's also the Etch-a-Sketch candidate.
I'm posting the article right now. Go ahead. Sorry, Sammy, go ahead, and I'll tell you guys about it in a minute.
Yeah, he's also the Etch-a-Sketch president, and they can rewrite it any time they want to. I mean, the guy is nothing but garbage from Massachusetts. And I'm sorry, I cannot support a candidate from Massachusetts who is an etch-a-sketch candidate. I mean, that he will rewrite his campaign any time he wants to. Virgil Goot, which is good, is not rewriting his stance every day. Even though I don't support Randy Johnson, Randy Johnson is not doing that.
Gary.
That would be Gary Johnson.
What's that?
I'd say that Gary would be Johnson. Gary Johnson, not Randy.
No, I mean, oh, man, yeah, Gary Johnson. I'm sorry. I apologize, Randy.
Don't worry, my friend. I knew who you meant.
I mean, I
thought those
don't
were going to be fighting words. No, I'm just joking, guys.
But, I mean, I'm sorry. We got to, I mean, if you're a conservative one day and you support a moderate, or, in my opinion, Mitt Romney is a liberal Democrat by nature, how can you go to vote for a liberal the next day? Plain and simple. I know some people in the Constitution Party don't consider Newt Gingrich as a conservative, but to me, he was the most conservative in the Republican Party. Every candidate has their faults. I don't agree with everything every candidate stands for. I don't agree with everything that Virgil Goot stands for. But I agree with what I have to overlook the minor issues I have with him and support him. And if we're going to change this country, we got to change it now. And even if my candidate loses, but we get enough votes out there for him, and Randy will explain it to you, I'm sure, that we need to change the system. Plain and simple. We need to get votes out there, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10%. And you're telling me I'm voting for Barack Obama? No, I'm not voting for Barack Obama. I am not supporting Barack Obama. I am not supporting Mitt Romney. I will not support the duopoly. I'm not sure if that was Randy, Rex, Tex, or whoever first started coining that word, but I am not supporting the duopoly. Plain and simple.
Well, yeah, look where the duopoly has gotten us, you know, at this point. Look where it's gotten us this far.
Yep, I mean, the Tea Party movement has been co-opted by the RNC, and I've had people tell me, oh, you're just crying because you're mad because your candidate didn't get nominated. No, it's not. It's because I stand behind my constitutional conservative principles. And the only candidate, and as Randy said earlier, the Constitution Party is actually probably the Republican Party of old, and before they were co-opted by the progressive, plain and simple. I am done ranting. I'm sorry.
No, okay.
Oh, that's okay, Sam. You don't need to be sorry for it. No, there's a lot of folks who mirror those sentiments. And I've heard that before. Oh, it's just sour grapes. I mean, isn't there a write-in? Okay, so I got distracted for a second. Isn't there a write-in like sore loser, something like that, for write-in candidates or sore loser laws or whatever?
No, that's not applicable to. That's only applicable to people like Ron Paul, who lost in the primary.
Interesting.
That's not applicable to us.
Yeah, well, no, I'm just talking about just even using those type of words for something for a write-in, you know, write-in ballot, kind of what Sammy was saying.
Yeah, and one thing that surprises me, when Newt called in on September 2nd on my show, Chris was there briefly, but they're telling me that, oh, well, Newt told you that you need to vote for Mitt Romney, so you must follow his lead. If I tell you to take a revolver and take out 5 bullets out of the 6, out of it and spin it around and shoot you in the head and pull the trigger to your head, are you going to do it? I'm not going to do it, and to me that's the same thing as voting for Mitt Romney. Russian roulette. And I am not going to pull out of my Glock, say if I have 7 bullets in there, I'm not going to pull out 6 of them and put a dud in there and keep firing until I blow my head off. That is plain stupid. And that's what people are doing that claim to be conservative that want to support Mitt Romney now. And I'm sorry. You cannot. I ain't going to do it. Excuse my little southern accent.
Well, here's the interesting. I say it's interesting. It is almost sad beyond belief or beyond, I don't know. You know, the fact is that people know that, you know, every election, politicians are more inclined, and I say politicians, because even though I've been involved in politics, I don't consider myself a politician. In fact, when people ask me why I got involved in politics, it's because I tell them it's because I hate politics. But, you know, these politicians, they know that every election they are inclined to lie to us. They tell us what we want to hear rather than where they really stand, and they paint a different picture from who they are. And it's bizarre that people know this, and yet they want to have their, you know, I think the Bible says have their, they have itchy ears, you know, where they want their ears tickled there, whatever that, you know, that particular phrase is. But I think it is truthful. People just want to be lied to so that they feel good about things. And then they go and do all these things based on a lie. And it's inconceivable to me that people do that, but yet the proof is all around us that they do.
Well, I had a
go ahead, Chris. I'm sorry.
I had a friend. Actually, it was kind of interesting, but I have a Facebook friend that is a Ron Paul supporter that we met on one of the Ron Paul sites and lives in the same town. Well, my wife invited her over to help clean out our overabundant tomato plants, and she actually worked for the Republican Party. I don't think she actually worked for them, but she was a liaison position. She has a media background. And so for 8 years, she would take the Republican message and then present it in a media environment out to the people. So for 8 years, she had the opportunity to see the Republicans up close and personal, and became very disillusioned at the party that was supposed to profess family, God, country, and the Constitution when she saw the things they did behind the scenes. She said that in her career of doing this for 8 years as a professional, that she might have met 3 or 4 people that actually stood and stayed standing on their principles in all the time she knew them. Now, that was pretty, and I believe it because I lived in the capital city in Juneau, Alaska, which is only less than 30,000 people. When you live in that small of a town that is a state capital, you know people. You know, I may not have been involved in politics professionally, but I knew all them creeps. You know, that stuff that Sarah Palin talks about, the corruption, the backroom deals, the cigar-smoking rooms where all these multi-billion-dollar oil deals are made. And you know, I mean, Sarah Palin had to sue the oil companies to get them to frickin' drill the oil and get it flowing. They put the gas line off. You know, the gas line was the second phase of the pipeline umpteen decades ago, and it was better for these guys to keep it, to pump that gas back in the earth and not bring it out to the market, which would help everybody, including our national security and prices, because it was more profitable for them not to pump it. And she went in and broke those deals up and had to sue them, the oil companies, to get them to do what the hell they were supposed to do in their contracts with the state of Alaska.
Was that kind of like, is that kind of like paying farmers to not grow a certain crop?
Yeah. Yeah. Who was talking about that last night? Randy was, right? You're in farm country. Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, no, I think that a lot of us have seen the truth, the rabbit, you know, we took the wrong pill and we went down the rabbit hole. And I don't know, there's days I wish I didn't learn what I learned this primary. I didn't get in this primary to learn this crap. I got in this primary to help get the best candidate to beat Barack Obama, and now I've, like, left my party.
No, you just found out the party left you. That's the thing.
Exactly, Randy. You nailed it right on the head. And here, I'm going to let you, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, I interrupted Chris, so you interrupted the interrupter.
And now I'm going to interrupt Randy. No, I'm just joking. Go ahead.
I'm done. Go ahead.
Well, you know, it's just, I'm telling you, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I'm really struggling with, you know, I'm dealing with people who, when they're, you know, I'm having these conversations, and I think that by and large, a lot of these guys have PhDs. They actually have some form of what we would call in the military G2, which is intelligence. They seem to have some form of intelligence, but yet they use that intelligence to develop a justification for perpetrating a lie. Because there's no way, if they really are as intelligent as they seem to be, there's no way that they don't know that what they're perpetrating is a lie, and why they go around justifying the perpetration of this lie. I can't wrap my mind around that.
Yeah, and call themselves Christians on top of it.
Oh, my goodness. And you just posted an article from a guy by the name of Chuck Baldwin, who was the 2008 presidential candidate. And I'll tell you, he's currently a Baptist preacher, but he was a Baptist preacher in Florida for one of the largest Baptist churches in Florida. And he moved to Montana for several reasons. He and his family, it was almost like that whole Clampett thing where he moved all of his family, you know, his kids who were lawyers and their kids, you know, his grandkids all moved to Montana. And he has a church up there now that is not associated with the Baptist church. It is not a 501c3. And so therefore, not only does he preached the principles of Christian liberty, but he also preaches the principles of civil liberties and does so unabashedly and unafraid. And he has many articles on his ChuckBaldwinLive.com. You can go look at his archives. But he rails so strongly against, and especially against preachers who have lost their way in this battle. And, in fact, he even incorporated many years ago, I think it was about 4 or 5 years ago, a group called the Black Robe Brigade. And for those of you who may not know what the Black Robe Brigade is, that was basically the preachers during the Revolutionary War who wore their black robes to church to preach their sermon, and that afternoon took off their robe and grabbed their muskets and said, "Let's go, boys."
Amen.
I have a quote of his I want to read, Randy, because you brought it up. I didn't post it earlier because I was like, ooh, do I want to post this one? But now that you just said that about Chuck Baldwin and his church, and I'm definitely going to get a hold of his material, because by not being a 501c3, they can actually talk about politics from the pulpit. That's awesome. Let me read you one of his quotes.
I think that's great. Go ahead, Chris.
A good many religious leaders and churchmen today would not take a backseat to the most greedy, corrupt politician or shady businessman that could be found. He sounds like my kind of guy.
Oh, he tells it like it is. He talks about Jesus himself talks about the principles of owning arms and bearing arms, because he uses some quotes right out of the New Testament where Jesus says, "I didn't come to bring peace but a sword." And there's another reference to where every man has a responsibility to own a sword.
Yeah, I'm sure. You know, and most up until recently, we actually knew that there were evil people in the world and you needed to protect yourself and your family. Ah, what a novel thought.
Well, now they're not evil anymore. They're not evil anymore, Chris. They're just, you know, they're just poor folks whose mind isn't right that just needs, you know, to be in front of the right doctor or take the right drug. And so there's no evil people anymore. They're just...
It's our fault as a society, and their daddy didn't take them fishing.
And I think Robert heard Dr. Youngblood that came on my show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard him multiple times on your show, yes.
Yeah, and the guy is an independent Baptist preacher. He runs a theology school here in Clark, Jacksonville. I mean, the guy is friggin' awesome. And, I mean, I have nothing but deep respect. And I haven't talked to him in a couple months now, so I don't know where. I doubt he is supporting Mitt Romney because how much he does not like the Mormon Church. And I need to give him a call and see if we can get him back on the show. I mean, the guy was not afraid. I mean, he's, 70? I think Robert, was it 72 or 73 years old?
Something like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Something like that.
The guy was friggin' awesome. This was back when I was doing my fundraiser for Keep Newdown. And I'm sorry, we cannot accept this guy from Massachusetts. We cannot accept the guy that was supposedly born in Illinois or Hawaii, which I have very serious doubts that he was born there. Folks, I'm going to get off the line because I got to get ready for my show and do a few things before my show starts up. And Randy, Chris, Robert, y'all are awesome patriots. Do not shut up. Do not back down.
Well, thank you, Sammy. I appreciate it. And, of course, you know, you're a patriot as well, and you know, all the fighting and what you do with your show and other things that you're into. And of course, folks, you can find Sammy on Constitutional Conservatives Unite tonight at 11 p.m. Eastern Time, which will be following immediately after Bar's Logic Political Talk. And thank you once again, Sammy.
I want to tell Randy one thing. I want to tell him thank you very much for getting Mr. Pilling on my show last night and helping me get Mr. DeCastro on my show. They are awesome patriots that stand up for the Constitution Party. And I owe you a bunch of thanks. And if I was a millionaire, I would probably send you $1 million.
And if you were a millionaire, I'd accept that million, brother. But you know what? I got to tell you, and I think it brings up, you know, listening to the interview and listening to these guys, because I've not had a chance to actually listen to them myself. But, you know, once again, I think, you know, here's two guys that hasn't heard me talk or heard other people talk and that sort of thing. But we are, you know, from across this nation. I think once again, you see how conclusively we are united in our positions. You know, when you're focused on the principles of the Constitution and those principles of freedom, you just can't go wrong, and it shows a very cohesive unity amongst our party all across the nation.
And Bernie and Mr. Pilling, Mark Pilling, we had an awesome conversation before the show, and I agree with him 100%. Luckily, he's here in my great state, and we're not shutting up. And you're awesome, Randy, and thank you very, very much. And good night, gentlemen, and if you're calling into my show, we'll see you on the flip side.
All right, buddy.
All right, take care, Sammy.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks again. Bye-bye. Well, at this time, gentlemen, if we keep teasing the folks about this article, do we want to get into that at this time, or proceed with something else? Chris,
well,
or Andy, what's your thoughts?
Let's roll.
You want to write an article on this? This would be a good time to exercise your mind on it.
Well, you know, is somebody keeping notes here? Where's my?
Yeah, second? I threw it on that on a doc in the file, and I have it open, so I can actually type as we spit things. I'm not fast, but I'll get some of the ideas down, so
right.
We won't lose them.
Well,
we are all multitaskers here.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know, when you look at, and you know what, I should look at that the 35 things that idiots should not vote for. Let me pull that up. And
yeah, that's what I have. I'm making spaces between the bullets right now.
Okay.
I don't know. When you get on a roll, I don't know if I can type that fast.
You know, if I know I got to, I can put that governor on, you know, to slow her down. Let me find where I'm at here. Got to get that pulled up. Okay. We certainly can start with, okay. Now, the first thing, pop-ups, I thought I had that killed. Let's go with the second bullet, because the first bullet, a president who has us on the road to serfdom, well, Romney isn't a president who has us on the road to serfdom yet. Just some of the things that he espouses, you know, it really kind of does put us on that road, but I don't know if that one necessarily applies. But the next one, a president who advocates higher taxes, wealth distribution, less freedom, and less opportunity. I think that one right there, you know, when you start looking at, there is nothing. While this says a president who advocates higher taxes, well, I won't say that Romney necessarily advocates higher taxes, though, you know, he's not saying it, but he's not talking about reducing taxes or reducing the government intrusion and the government departments that are keeping our taxes so high, and the troops spread across the globe that keeps our taxes high. All they're doing, and especially, you know what's really weird? I don't know if I don't remember them saying anything about jobs in these bullets, but, you know, the reason they want to get people more jobs is so that they can get more revenue. It's not about Americans becoming, you know, self-sustaining and not reliant upon government redistribution of wealth. It's about trying to create more revenue so that they can sustain the unconstitutional nature of our federal government right now as it is. So certainly that would, you know, incorporate the less freedom and less opportunity.
I haven't heard anything in anything that he said that has anything to do with turning this country around, i.e. the Fed. In fact,
Right.
He likes the job that Ben Bernanke's been doing.
Right.
You know, when we went over...
Go ahead.
Well, when we went over just some of these points about QE3 last night and briefly at the beginning of this show, that by the end of QE3, the government will own every piece of land in this country, will be in possession of every loan that's tied to property in this country. And he's for that. He's never spoken out against it. The only thing he's ever said was some little flippant little thing to try to convince the Ron Paul supporters that he's their guy, and that is, oh, yeah, we should audit the Fed, which is, you know, like, right, whatever. You know, I really believe you.
Yeah, exactly. The next one, you know, some of these are really a president, I'm skipping one, a president coated in Teflon who freely gets away.
Sorry, you know, I'm sorry. You're talking about Romney or Obama?
Yeah.
Either one. I guess it applies either one.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when you look at, you know, some of the things that, well, you know, all this stuff that, you know, especially when you take a look at, well, this will be dealt with later on in one of the other bullets. But, you know, the fact that he declared himself absolutely unequivocally pro-choice, and it was based upon the positions that his mother had taken when she was running for the Senate, you know, here it is now. He's now pro-life. And somehow, you know, he's coated with this Teflon that pro-choice stuff doesn't hit him anymore. How is that possible? I don't know. You know, well, it does say. In fact, here it is in the same bullet. I did miss this. I didn't read it the rest of the way. A president coated in Teflon who freely gets away as an accomplice to the murdering of innocent Americans. Now, they're talking about
in the AA.
Well, okay, that too. I mean, you know, Romney mentioned in the presidential debates, the Republican presidential debates earlier, that he believed it was okay for a president to do that. As long as a panel, whoever that might be, determines that the person that he's going to assassinate or murder is a terrorist. But this one specifically says murdering of innocent Americans, and the only innocent Americans that I know of is the unborn. And so with this, you know, Romney was pro-choice. So as far as I'm concerned, he's an accomplice in the murder of innocent Americans.
How do you – let me ask you a crazy question, because you've been around the political game a little longer than I have. How do people who are pro-choice justify their vote for Romney? I mean pro-life, I'm sorry. I get confused. I mean, Romney changes every day, so I got a little confused. Sorry.
Well, I can answer that for you.
Give it to me. I'm confused.
Well, one is he – they say, oh, well, look at the platform. We've heard that too. Oh, well, he's changed his mind. He's seen his way, you know, the errors of his ways. Now he's, you know, pro-life. You know, he's explained himself how he's pro-life now. And one of the ways, and that you'll probably hear this too eventually, if it has been heard already, but when Obama was, this is what got a lot of Catholics. It's in 2008 when Obama was running, he was trying to get the Catholic vote, and people were saying, oh, well, you know, he's pro-choice. And then one of the spinsters was actually at a university I was attending. I was at, and they're like, oh, well, what he's going to do is, and this actually, I can't believe it, fooled a lot of Catholics in the vote for Obama, because they said what Obama was going to do is address the root causes of why people have abortions. And so if he addresses the root cause and helps with the root cause of, you know, abortions, then that would actually be more effective in lessening the amount of abortions that happen. So those are some of the arguments that I've heard of. I'm sure, right? Yeah. Yeah. Does it make logical sense, does it?
Oh, he was going to fix society and all the moral ills of society? Is that what they're claiming?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, he's going to help, you know, with, you know, end hunger and the, you know, poverty in the nation. It's actually, you know, poverty is what is a big contributor to why there's so many abortions, because of poverty. So, And so
you know what's
people like sex.
Well, I was going to say, you know what the argument against
don't want any responsibility.
Well, I was going to say, what's the argument against the idea that poverty promotes abortions is the fact that the more kids you have, the more money you make. And there are some baby factories out there that are doing it solely for the money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, there you go.
But, you know.
So you mean they all lie?
Here's the thing. You know, a person who is truly pro-life, that you believe that the unborn child is a person and is a life that warrants the fullest protection of our constitutional rights. If you truly believe that position, there's no way that you could somehow convince yourself that you can accept exceptions. Because, you know, we're talking about there's always what they call three exceptions. And life of the mother is not an exception to abortion, because if it is truly about the life of the mother, the physician is trying to save both the life of the mother and of the child. And if there has to be a decision made, a weighty, heavy decision, then certainly I understand the discussion with, you know, the doctor. In fact, we had one dear lady who was absolutely 100% pro-life. And she actually told me, she says, Randy, I was faced with the position of the doctor says, look, if you have this baby, there's a chance that you might die. And so she talked with the doctor. She talked with her pastor, and she came up with the decision, and she told the doctor, if it comes down to, you know, having to save the baby or save my life, she says, I need you to save my life, because I have four other children. And if I die, there's no one to take care of them. This baby that might live could not take care of themselves, nor could they take care of my four other children. So if it comes down to the choice, save my life. But fortunately, it didn't, and they saved both. And so this life of the mother is a red herring that is absolutely not a part of the abortion, because the abortion issue revolves around one major word, and that major word is murder. It is the taking of an innocent human life without the due process of the law. That's murder. It's not just killing. It is murder. Okay, so it's not just eliminating a tree or a flower or something, you know, in your way, weeds. It is an innocent human being who is a person and worth the fullest protection of our laws. Now we get to the other two exceptions, and that being the exception of rape or incest. Okay, and here's the bizarre thing about this. We think it's okay to kill the baby because it was a product of a rape or incest, and yet do not kill the rapist or that incestuous, heinous monster that perpetrated that crime. Okay? So here's the deal. Why should the innocent human baby be penalized, killed for the sins of the father? The father is the one who committed the crime, who raped, or who committed the incest, which is basically rape in itself. So the point is, in fact, biblically, if you look into the Old Testament law, if you raped somebody, you were guilty of committing a crime that was worth the death penalty. You were killed for raping somebody. So if anybody's got to be killed here, it should be the rapist and not that innocent born child. Now, here's the thing. Should the mother who suffered at the hands of a rapist be forced to raise that child that is the result of a rape? And I would suggest to you that most likely the answer is no, because there's a significant chance that this child would be the object of hatred, because this object was the product of a heinous crime perpetrated upon the mother. However, there are exceptions to that rule, because I know of mothers who have been raped, who have had a child, and they look at this child as the only positive thing that happened out of that horrendous thing that happened to her, and look at this child as a miracle, okay? So,
And also let me chime in real quick, Randy, and then we have another gentleman who wants to come in, and then I'll make this point and then finish yours up, and then I'll let him in, is that I've done some research, actually, of, you know, the detrimental psychological effects that on women that have been raped and then have abortions. I mean, I won't go into all of the details now, but just a little synopsis is actually the I did a research on abortion as a issue of violence, which you don't really hear about, you know, a lot, I don't think. But, you know, how what it is, you know, they were, you know, the victim, I'm talking about the woman rape, who they were the victim of a violent act perpetrated against them. And so their anger is outward towards the rapist for, you know, doing that violent act against what they would consider innocent, that which is themselves. But then when they turn around, and, you know, there's been a lot of cases where the woman, where she had an abortion, the anger and loathing would actually redirect itself inward, because now they consider that they were the perpetrator of violence over innocence. And then what they some do is they compare the violence that was enacted upon them and then, you know, compare it with the violence that they did on the child. And so, and a lot of women actually, you know, go through, you know, depression and things of that nature because of that. So,
well, you know, absolutely, there are a lot of things that we need to address that is associated with these crimes that have been perpetrated on women. And believe me, without going into further detail, it has happened very, 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 very close to me. And we actually had to discuss these very important issues in our own family. So, you know, when I talk about this, I happen to know a little bit that goes along with it. And so, you know, the point is, the child, the unborn child, is a person that warrants the protection of our Constitution. And, you know, and when people say, well, what's your solution? The solution is, let's uphold our Constitution in this. And the only thing is that I would say is that lacks is that we need a constitutional amendment, a personhood amendment that declares a human being as being a person from conception unto natural death. And then that takes that definition out of the hands of the Supreme Court, who has actually been able to redefine who a person is, because if they still defined a person as a human being from conception, they could never rule the way they have. And so the only way they've done that is to ignore the true definition of who a person is. And so we'll just kind of leave this this particular issue, because this show isn't necessarily about pro-life. But at the bottom of at the end of the day, if you can't get it right on life, I absolutely cannot trust you to get it right on anything.
Well, at this time, we've got someone on the line who I believe is the Rex from the Tex and Rex Show, which can be heard on Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday evenings. I will let Rex tell him what times they are, because honestly I cannot recall exactly what the times are. I know they're Eastern time. But without further ado, I will be opening up Rex's mic. Rex, you are live. Thank you very much for coming to the show.
Hey, Robert. Hey, guys. It's nice to see that you guys are being calm and quiet and you know, completely level-headed tonight, and it's a refreshing change from the usual ranting and raving that's going on about the you know, mildly, you know, dire situation that we're facing in this country. Sarcasm intentional. As for the times for the show, we are at 10 p.m. except on debate days. If there's, well, you know, if the duopoly is airing a show with their characters that are professing to be candidates for office, we go at 11 after the debate. It's an interesting discussion you're having. What I find odd is that we're faced with a situation where we require a constitutional amendment to define a pre-existing scientific fact. I don't think that you need to define life by positive law. It's irrefutable scientific fact that as soon as an egg is fertilized, that is a human being and is no longer part of the woman's body. And let's remember something. Half of those babies that are murdered are women. So it is one of the biggest crimes perpetrated against women, not merely the mothers, but also the unborn girls. And, you know, a lot of people try to make this a theological issue or even a metaphysical issue. If your constitution for your country does not defend your citizens to have the the right to their own life, then what is the point of any other law, provision, right, guarantee, or privilege? It's pointless. We can talk about tax rates all day long. We can talk about social justice all day long. We can talk about foreign policy all day long. But if a country is willing to murder its own citizens, then what's the point of discussing any of these other things? And because we've been doing it for 39 years, going on 40, shortly after the inauguration of the next douchebag in the White House, we're seeing the effects of that kind of warped logic. Because we've become a nation that merely elects jerk-offs to do the very things that we would anathematize others for doing to us directly. But because it's done through government, somehow it's legitimate. You know, no one should be able to steal from anybody else. But if I elect someone to steal from you, that's okay. No one should be able to kill anybody else. But if I elect someone to kill you, that's okay. No one should be able to tell you whether you can or can't have a gun. But if I elect someone to shoot you with one, that's okay. That's the kind of warped thinking you get. And you may have a written constitution. You may have 225 years of tradition with this law. You may have a moral voice in the country, but all of that is for naught if you're willing to violate the very principle of life, which precedes all other rights, and everything else will become warped. So I echo what Randy said. If I can't trust you to get life right, how the hell can I trust you to get anything else right?
Can I throw something in on there?
Of course, Chris. Go ahead.
Here's the thing, and this rolls back to, you know, as you were talking, Randy, and as Rex was talking, I was thinking of all the arguments I've heard on the other side, because I have. Here's the thing that people don't understand, especially liberals, especially pro-Obamacare people. If we can systematically kill millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of unborn children at the drop of a hat without any socially moral remorse, when Obamacare is enacted and you become a number and what they call actuary calculation in a government, in a country that's broke, I guarantee you they're coming after you when you're no longer productive and producing taxes for society. Because if they can do that to babies in the womb, they can do it to the old people too, or the disabled, or people like my son, who's 24-hour care. People don't understand where this is going. You know, the horrors, when we read history and we read about the things that happened in Russia with Stalin, you know, if you want to solve your hunger problems, you just kill off hundreds of millions of people, and heck, you ain't got so many hunger problems anymore. You can get your country under control. You look at Hitler, you look at the annihilation of races. You know, the news loves to portray the atrocities that are occurring, these humanitarian wars, you know, these concepts all the time. But you don't understand. It happens everywhere. Mankind is capable of it, and it can happen right here to you in the near distant future. I'm done.
It's already happening, Chris. I mean, the simple fact is that this is a eugenicist agenda, and it is fully in place here in our country. We just choose not to see it. You know, Margaret Sanger, who established the Birth Control League of America to get rid of those undesirables like blacks, Jews, Catholics, disabled people, she was very admired by Hitler, and it was his program that basically, her program that basically he implemented in Nazi Germany. And when people tell you that's not what it is, well, it is, because if you can determine that an American can be killed because of their location or because of, quote, their viability, then there is no reason why you can't kill them for anything that could violate that principle. For example, if you have a 22.8% unemployment rate, well, if you killed half of those people, you drop it down to 10%. Why wouldn't you do that? I mean, that's a great way to solve unemployment, isn't it? You just kill all the ones that don't have a job, and you could actually have 0% unemployment if you kill enough of them.
But, Rex, that couldn't happen in America, could it?
Yeah, well, When you stop becoming a viable contributor to the inflation and tax rate to the bankers, and you actually become a draw on society that has no voting necessity, why not?
Yeah.
Why not? You know, we've got all these humanitarian wars that we're engaged in, and should we go into Uganda? What about what's happening in Nigeria? And do we go into Syria? It's like, why don't we first liberate the Americans in this country who are killed at the rate of 4,000 a day? Wouldn't that make more sense?
Right, and frankly, I don't. You know, I'm tired of hearing the argument. Well, who's going to feed them? I mean, are you going to? Everyone's heard this argument before. Well, are you going to take care of them? Are you going to take on, you know, the responsibility of all these unborn babies to take care of them?
Yes. The answer is yes. How about yes? I mean, isn't that what the whole social justice crowd is about? Taking
right.
care of
mm-hmm.
everybody and their mother and giving them all sorts of free stuff. Well, instead of shipping food halfway across the world to feed people that you don't know, how about feeding the people in your own country? We have enough food. We make enough
right.
food, you know, and we should stop flooding these other people's countries with all the free crap because it's just completely destroying their agricultural business. So maybe we should look to ourselves before we start becoming the democratic savior of the world at the end of a gun. You know,
well, maybe you wouldn't need to have open borders if you actually had citizens to fill the jobs
exactly.
in your own country.
Exactly. And that, I agree with that 100%. And I think that that's one of the reasons why that neither party in this duopoly is doing anything real with illegal immigration, with sealing the borders, because in any, you know, some call the United States as empire, okay? In any, let's say, just say empire, when the indigenous population starts to decrease, okay, then they have to influx, you know, all these immigrants, and in our case, illegal immigrants, okay, to, you know, as a staple for the population. And once that happens, then that's when you start the decline of the nation, and that is what we're experiencing right now.
Well, sure.
Because,
then, of course,
my mom's mom had 10 children. My dad's mom had 18 children. I mean, that's unheard of now. And if you do have that many children, you're put on the TV show and, you know, and
yeah.
put on tabloids
spectacle.
And things of that nature, some kind of freak.
It's a spectacle. Because it's unpatriotic to, you know, make more Americans at home. That's ridiculous. We can't make more Americans here. We need to import them from Guatemala. I mean, why would we want to make more Americans here ourselves? That's ridiculous. And you wonder, you know, everybody freaks out. Obama's a Muslim and we can't give him 4 more years. The Muslims are taking over. Well, maybe if you had more babies, then the Muslims wouldn't matter. How about that?
Exactly.
It's the death of a nation. That's how you kill your
right.
own. When you start killing your own, then what chance do you have? That's like saying that I've just given up on the future. I'm going to kill my own future citizens. And then bitch about it when I'm old because there's no one to take care of me or feed into a social security system. Well, if you murder them, they're not going to be around to take care of you.
You know,
those illegal immigrants will take care of you in your old age.
You know, I seen a clip years ago. It was a little cartoon. And, you know, for a little cartoon, I thought it was kind of, you know, profound in its own way. Because it had this... this guy, you know, he guess he's in some kind of church or what have you, praying, and he's like, God, you know, why don't you bring to us, you know, someone who can help us cure hunger, help us cure the sick and heal the world and bring us peace. And as this, you know, God looking down at him says, I did. You aborted him. You know, so it's like you never know, you know, what when a parent – you know, as an abortion, they never know what that future could have been for that child. It could have very well been the person who invented, you know, whatever that could improve the welfare for the rest of, you know, the world, the state, or even something small, where they could have affected just one other person's life. You know, you just don't know. And I'm sure there's, you know, examples of that all over the place, you know, where that has happened, where, you know, people, you know, survived abortions when, the, you know, and then they went on to do great things. So you just never know.
Yeah, and I mean, to kind of bring it back to this particular election, you know, you have this alleged argument that, you know, Obama is pro, quote, choice, which basically means pro-abortion, and so is Joe Biden. So we need to elect Romney Ryan so that we can have pro-life. Well, the Republican Party platform may be pro-life, but the last 39 years they haven't done shit about that, so I'm not sure how legitimate that is. And number two, Mitt Romney not only is pro-abortion, sterilization, and all these other horrible things, he actually profits. He makes personal profit from that. So he's a merchant of death. And, you know, so they stuck, you know, because Joe Biden is Catholic on Obama's side, they stuck Ryan on his side to kind of cull the Catholic vote, which is that prize vote, because there's allegedly 65 million Catholics in this country, even though 54% of them voted for Obama last time. But then Ryan, who's allegedly this pro-life fiscal conservative, in the last debate, was asked a specific question, both he and Biden, about how their Catholic faith informs them regarding the issue of abortion. And both of them were completely in departure from 2,000 years of Catholic teaching regarding this subject. So if these two men who profess their faith publicly and both say that they are ardently adhering to it are willing to depart from 2,000 years of tradition and teaching that is not optional. If you're a professed Catholic, that is a required teaching, and, you know, if you don't like it, there are zillions of other churches or religions you can go to, but these guys chose to stay Catholic. Then how can I trust them to adhere to a party platform if they're willing to disregard the teaching of Christ? It's a specious argument, and it is designed to confuse you, to get people who are Christians to vote for these guys in the hopes that something will be done about the murder of the innocent. But if we vote for them, then doesn't that put the blood of the innocent on our hands too?
Wow. Yeah, that's something where I don't think a lot of folks make that connection. I know, but they're lied to, though. I mean, they're lied to that they actually have been convinced, and I'm not trying to, you know, take any responsibility, you know, away from the electorate, but that they've been convinced that Romney, I don't know how, but they've been convinced that somehow Romney has, you know, changed his tune, and, well, I mean, he is a flip-flopper, we know that, but and now he's somehow, you know, somehow pro-life, or that, well, wait a minute, he's the presidential candidate for the Republicans, and on the Republican platform is supposed to be pro-life, so by default, he's pro-life. And we all know that's not the case. I mean, if that was the case, we've talked about this, you know, on a number of occasions, he would have taken, $50,000 plate donations from the manufacturers of the day after pill. I mean, by now, he's got to know that that would have, that that's where the money came from, but I've never heard anything about him giving that money back. You know, in process, say, well, wait a minute, this is blood money. I don't want any of it. But to my understanding, he never did that.
Yeah. Well, go ahead, Randy.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, in looking at reading through the chat, apparently we've lost two people who didn't want to talk about things that are going on within the womb. And, you know, I realize that, you know, this was not billed as a quote unquote pro-life discussion, but it was a fact about, you know, Romney's position. You know, he was pro-choice.
Randy, that's the nature. That's the nature of some blog talk radio shows. It's organic,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah,
so sometimes these things happen. I'll just have to adjust the archive description a little bit.
Well, there you go.
Robert, wouldn't it be better? Wouldn't it be better if you just stayed away from these controversial issues and just kind of stuck to the ones we can all agree on?
It would be no fun, man.
Oh my gosh, yeah, that would be. Yeah, I mean, but come on, what else is there to get my blood pressure up, right?
Well, my input is, and we've all had this discussion before, and I've posted it 1,000 times, is that I don't believe any of them. It is one of the hottest topics that anytime you want to, you know, rile the natives up, just throw the abortion topic in the middle of the room. And I've seen it, you know, in my groups and other groups. And it seems to be a driving force for many Christian conservative voters. And yet, somehow they've convinced themselves that that Obama's evil is greater than Romney's evil, and so they're going to vote for Romney. And what amazes me about that is the passionate argument that we've had over this topic, not only in this primary, but through the years since Roe v. Wade. And here we are with all these people who claim this is one of their top pet issues in their life, are going to roll over on this issue. And I just am curious as to how they can justify it. Especially the loudmouth ones.
It's fear. Yeah. It's fear, Chris. And I've had conversations with, you know, mass attending Catholics who adhere to Catholic teaching, and it is taught that if you have no choice to vote for the principles in which you believe, then you vote for the candidate who will do the least damage. Well, if I'm not mistaken, voting for someone like, I don't know, Virgil Goode would be doing the least damage because he's pro-life. Or writing in Ron Paul would do the least damage because he's pro-life. So, you know, when you do have a pro-life choice, how do you vote for the one who's not pro-life? The answer I always get is, well, he says he's pro-life, and I have no reason to doubt him.
And well, I'm an alien.
And then you give them the evidence, and they tell you, well, I just don't believe that. Well, that's fine.
Right.
If you want to just confirm your own bias to make yourself feel good about voting for a child killer, then you go right ahead. But the very simple fact is there is no way in hell anybody can factually tell you that Romney is pro-life. Yes, we can't know what's really in a man's heart, but I can look at his actions, and his actions stink.
Right, and his actions show that exactly that he's been nothing but pro-abortion. I don't even call it pro-choice. I call it pro-abortion. But, gentlemen, we do have someone else who is on hold. And
hey,
can
I just make one quick comment?
Sure. Go ahead, Randy. Go ahead.
And it's just I wanted to address the person who goes by the delicatessen there. The point that I make, because she said, well, what if this person is going to commit suicide because they've been raped and they're going through all of this? This is why I say they rate the fullest protection of the Constitution. Nothing is absolute. We have systems to deal with these things. But to just carte blanche murder a child is not an option. They rate the protection of, say, the court system. And so, and that's what I'm saying. It depends, but there's got to be a way that it depends, and that's by making it a constitutional issue. You can't just go out and murder somebody. You know, and so that's where I come in. So I just wanted to end with that the option is, it's not an absolute. You cut off, you know, any discussion or chat with this, you know, and as Texas, it's imperfect. We're dealing with an imperfect medium, but we're dealing with an imperfect world. And our founding fathers set up a system to be able to deal with this imperfect world, and it's been a violation of that has caused all of these problems. So I'll just end with that, and thanks.
Thank you, Randy. And at this time, I have, I think it's TikTalik7, who is on the line. So I'm opening up your mic. Just give us your name and location, and tell us what's on your mind.
Thank you very much. Yes, it's TikTalik77. I'm here in good old Cincinnati, Ohio, and I actually wanted to thank you guys for talking about the issue of abortion. I consider myself to be a conservative, especially a fiscal conservative, but I was at one point in time pro-choice, and it was frankly because I was ignorant and I was duped into believing that, oh, yeah, a person has the right to choose. And it wasn't until, no joke, one day I just had kind of a eureka moment and said, holy crap, I've been duped this whole time. And I approach pro-life from a slightly different standpoint. I'm going to put a slight little plug in here. I hope you don't mind. So I'm a host on another station here on the blog called Understanding Evolution. And all my shows are based on what I believe is to be an attempt to basically sidestep the establishment clause of the Constitution and when there's been attempts to put creationism into public schools, and now they're using museums and amusement parks. But in terms of the issue of abortion, I approach it from a scientific standpoint instead of a religious standpoint. when a human is, when we're in the process genetically of actual fertilization, that, whatever you want to call it, that gamete or that whatever you want to call it, it is genetically determined to be human. It's not going to turn into a camel. It's not going to genetically become a rat or something completely different. So from a scientific standpoint, when you choose to kill that thing, you are in essence killing a human. And last time I checked, that is murder. So if a person chooses to do that, in my opinion, they are committing a murder, in scientifically speaking.
Well, I've got to want to add on to that, and this is something. This is the hypocrisy that always confuses me. I live in the great state of Alaska, and there's eagles abound. I mean, like, you know, when you're out there fishing off the shore, you look up in the trees, and it's whiteheads by the thousands, as far as your eye can see. And if I was caught with an eagle feather, I could go to prison. If I was caught with an eagle egg or destroyed an eagle egg or an endangered species, you know, like the vulture, you know, some of these great vultures that are endangered species, I could go to prison for killing that egg because that egg is a baby vulture or a baby eagle. It is. These are the things that I just kind of like drop my jaw at. And you know, it's just some interesting stuff. What a conversation. Anyway, go ahead, guys.
Yeah, I've heard that argument before, and I agree with you. It's completely ridiculous. There's it's a strange double standard. And but I just thought I would put a little bit of a scientific twist on there. And also, the little sidestep, too. I know you guys were talking earlier about Hitler. And I hope you don't mind me interjecting, since we kind of did a sidebar into abortion discussion anyway. Why not? My shows, as I've said, they're heavily focused on overcoming what I see to be a political power grab and money movement on the area of creationism. Keep in mind, I am a conservative. I know that seems kind of different. Normally, a lot of people that associate themselves with understanding evolution or adopting it are typically very liberal mindset. I'm not. But it's, in terms of Hitler, a lot of people will say Hitler based his views on Darwinism, that basically exploited the racist ideas of Darwinism to justify the genocide that he committed. I just wanted to add to that by saying Hitler actually based his ideas not on Darwinism, but on a divine right philosophy. In fact, if you looked at his first edition of the Mein Kampf, it indicates that Hitler was, in fact, a young Earth creationist, believe it or not, at the time of his writings. You know, he even said this planet will, as it did thousands of years ago, move through either ether devoid of men. Lots of references, but I just wanted to say evolution does not promote social Darwinism, and neither does religion, even if he invokes it, because that's his choice, but that doesn't make religion or evolution inherently bad. And I just wanted to put that little plug in there.
Interesting. Well, yeah, thinking that's we did briefly talk about him. I know one thing that Hitler was into also was eugenics, which actually is it's an interesting concept, but you know, it kind of goes along with my interest in GMOs. But is there anything that you want to chime in on that, or anybody about the eugenics? Because they're talking about, you know, how they used experimentation on folks. I know it's kind of going off on a little tangent, but since it's here, it's kind of an interest, and I won't spend a lot of time on it. But is there anything you want to chime in on that?
Well, if you're okay with me just adding a plug on that, then. So eugenics is really based on genetic principles that are independent of evolution. Basically, it is just it's just as compatible, frankly, with creationism. And, in fact, at least one younger creationist, William Tinkle, he actually advocated eugenics and selective human breeding. Many eugenics arguments, you know, such as the expected effect of selective sterilization and results of interracial mating, are really based, frankly, on bad biology. And better biology education, including the teaching of evolution, frankly, can help counter the assumptions on which eugenics is based.
Okay, that's cool. I just, you know, as I said, I just wanted to get a brief thing on that. And I think, in a way, it can tie into the, you know, since we are on the right to life, the abortion issue, or maybe even the population issue. That was it, Randy or Rex, who brought that point up about the attempt of decreasing the population.
That would have been Rex.
Me.
No, Rex would never introduce a controversial topic like that.
You might do a better job.
Well, I mean, look, the simple fact is that eugenics doesn't have to be approached from either a theological or a scientific perspective. It is just a completely warped man-made construct, which is just designed to put one group over the other. And it doesn't matter who's doing it. So it isn't necessarily an Aryan idea, okay? It could be done by anybody for any reason. But the simple fact is that with the scientific advances that we have now in regards to genetics, it becomes a very frightening and real possibility. And if anybody has read Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, or The Time Machine by H.G. Wells, you will see where eugenics can go. And what used to be science fiction is very soon going to possibly be scientific fact. And if your warped outlook on the world is that, you know, it is merely matter that is designed to be fashioned by man for any ends that he chooses by any means necessary, then we live in a very dangerous world. And just because we have the power to do something doesn't mean that we ought to do it. And the problem with the way that we've been going for the last 40 years, and the reason why we get two losers like Romney and Obama as our alleged choices for ostensibly ruler-in-chief, because it's no longer just about running the government, they're running your life, you will start to go down a road that is very dark and dangerous, because as soon as you put that power in the hands of men, they are prone and will definitely misuse it. The simple fact is that there are some things that we shouldn't do, and it isn't a matter of law. It's not a matter of positive law. It's not a matter of elections. It's a matter of who are we as a people. And the reason you have these two choices is because we started thinking to ourselves that we can do anything within our power if the result is desired. Well, according to whom and according to what desires? And is it that far-fetched that if these people are willing to inflate your wealth away, to tax the crap out of you, to redistribute it to the corporations, to consolidate profits, natural resources, and power, is there any reason to believe that they won't start tinkering around with the genetic code in order to create a race of slaves that will be physically strong to do hard labor for the masters, but mentally diminished, who will do anything that they are told without thinking?
Oh, I think we have that already, don't we?
Well, I was going to say, if you look around, are we that far off right now?
That's a legitimate concern, yeah. Especially with, like, if you find out if your child has Down syndrome, I've seen studies done that show a high propensity to want to abort the child as soon as they find out that it has Down syndrome.
Mm-hmm. Well, look at the derision that Sarah Palin got because she chose to keep her child who she knowingly delivered having Down syndrome. I mean, it's that kind of sick mentality that is not going to be, you know, because a lot of the arguments against making abortions illegal is, well, they'll still go on, they'll just be illegal and dangerous. Well, let me tell you something. There's no such thing as a safe abortion, because it always ends up in the death of at least one of the alleged patients, and then there is a massive danger to the other one. You're talking about perforations of the intestines, of the rectum, bleeding out. It's very dangerous procedure for a woman to go through. Her life is in danger, and clearly the intent is to kill the life of the child. So you've got two Americans who are basically potentially being murdered. One of them definitely murdered, the other one potentially maimed or killed. And if you codify that by saying, well, it's okay, we're going to make it a law because people are going to do it anyway, well, then, you know, why don't we legalize murder? You know, I mean, maybe some guy pissed me off and I want to kill him. Shouldn't I have the right to do that?
Oh, you know what I want, Rex? You know what I want? I want duels reinstated legally.
Well, I'm all for that.
You know that there people think we're so civilized today. No, we were civilized when somebody walked up and called you a son of a, you know what, and actually had to think about facing a sword or a bullet over it. I think duels would make us a much more civilized country again. Let's find a candidate that will get this enacted.
Wasn't one of our vice presidents killed that way?
Yeah, on the court, the last duel was in front of the Congress. I think it's a great idea because, you know, you're going to be a lot more polite. I mean, you think about all these little smear people that hide behind Facebook. If you could actually call somebody out to a duel, I mean, you just think how much more polite people would be if they're if they had to face the Piper. I'm all for it. I think
it would be a lot better. I think it would be a lot better if we had presidential duels instead of presidential debates. And then if we're lucky, Obama and Romney are both so good at dueling that they would just kill each other.
In that case, I might actually be inclined to run.
We're not actually meaning that.
In that case, I might actually be inclined to run for the office of president.
Let's start a new movement. Let's start a new Facebook.
Presidential
duels now.
What are your guys' feelings about going to a three-party system? Is that even possible anymore?
I don't believe in a three-party system. I believe in a multi-party system.
Yeah. Okay.
Where have I heard that one before?
This crazy Marine I know said it once.
Yeah, we've done a lot of research on this stuff. In fact, you got the vice chair of the Constitution Party on with you right now. He can give you the rundown.
Let's go ahead and do that, Randy.
Well, you know, it's, and I'll put it to you this way. I'll put it in terms of economics, something that economics 101, you know. Why do we get the best product for the best price? And there's one word, it's called competition. And we in America believe in competition so much that we actually have what's called antitrust laws, which prevent somebody from being able to develop a monopoly where they could solely control the goods and products and services. So where, you know, when you have that one control, you know what happens? The quality goes down and the price goes up. And you know, what we have here today is a duopoly, which, as I have said time and time again, a duopoly is just like a monopoly, only it's twice as bad because there is at least a facade of competition. But there really is no competition. There's just simply agreement between the duopoly controllers there to say, okay, well, today my price will be this. Tomorrow you can have that price. And, you know what, we won't make our product quite as good. And so there's this facade of competition, but you don't understand the control up there. And that's what we got with the Republicans and Democrats. It's not a two-party system. It is a two-party duopoly. Ooh. And they are controlling the goods and the products here. In fact, you know, I make this point. Look. Take a look at our politicians and tell me this isn't true. The quality has gone up while the price is, or the quality has gone down while the price has gone up. Skyrocket. Okay? So what do we do? Well, we have to bust this duopoly. And obviously, those people who are in charge, the two-party duopoly, is not going to write the laws to destroy their duopoly. So we're going to have to break this ourselves. And the way we do this is we start winning elections. And we need a multi-party system because then, you know, the duopoly becomes the triopoly, okay? It becomes engulfed. And so what we need is a multi-party system where we can start providing competition on a constant and consistent basis. I'm not talking about just simply a multi-party of solely conservatives. I'm talking about bringing the Green Party in and the Libertarians in and this New Justice one and God forbid the one that Roseanne Barr just created to run for her presidency.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my God.
You know, that's how Ireland operates. Ireland has about 5 political parties.
Yeah, well, I know that there would certainly be some coalitions that are somewhat developed. I'm not talking about a coalition government. I'm talking about a multi-party government that are separate entities and represent the various people with those political philosophies and ideas. The idea that two parties can somehow represent the plethora of political ideology out there is just beyond bizarre. And then Republicans want to complain because we've got rhinos. Well, the system is inherent to produce rhinos because you're trying to represent everybody. So, of course, there's people who don't believe that in your platform that are trying to get elected through that system because you've made it that way.
If I could chime in real quick on that, I love the concept, playing slightly devil's advocate here. My concern is, in a perfect world, multi-party system would be fantastic. My concerns, which I might be, this is my opinion, my concerns are that I inherently feel that people are, frankly, generally stupid and are lazy. And I don't know if it's
that just put it out there.
And so my question is if people are inherently lazy or stupid or, frankly, are unwilling or incapable of taking the time to truly understand the issues, how do we get people's knowledge levels high enough and their passion levels high enough to actually make it work?
Well, Randy, can I chime in on that real quick?
Sure, go ahead.
I think that a multi-party system is the solution to that problem, because let's just say that 80% of your population is lazy and stupid and doesn't know the issues and what's going on. If you have a multitude of candidates, then those people are going to be split up amongst those various candidates based on personality or logo or Cheetos or whatever other stupid reason they come up with to vote, and the 20% that are informed would be able to find the real candidate. The fact is that if 80% of your population is lazy and stupid and you give them two stupid choices, they're going to pick one of them, and that's where we are right now. And then the other thing in regards to having to build coalition governments because we have multi-parties, that's not the way our government works. Only one man is going to be president from one party, even if you had 100 parties to choose from. And as far as Congress goes, I don't care if they're from 100 different parties. What difference does it make? As long as the, you know, the rules of Congress prevail and they pass legislation that is constitutional, they'll have to figure out how to get along. You essentially have multi-parties right now. Look at the Republican Party. In the Republican Party, you have libertarians, you have conservatives, and you have progressives, and various other shades of political philosophies. They just happen to be under one label. All we're doing is saying take them off from one label and split the labels up and let people actually be exposed for who they really are. So when you got a Republican like Mitt Romney and a Republican like Ron Paul, you want to really tell me that those two guys share anything in common other than the label?
Great points. Like it.
Yeah. And there's the other point, though, on the other side of that coin, Rex, is the fact that the reason there are so many what we would almost consider lazy and stupid people is because they have lost hope. They have nobody to represent them. So what do? They just stay home and give up. So if they've actually got somebody who actually has a chance of representing their political ideas, their values, we are going to see a more engaged electorate. It's just the fact that we have no real representation out there. Why do I want to get engaged when nobody represents me? Who am I going to vote for? Do I have to vote for the lesser of two evils? Why should I even go get dressed and go to the poll? I have nobody I can vote for. And so the multi-party system actually gives a potential to re-engage the electorate and to find that niche. I mean, when you figure 60% of the eligible voters, not registered, eligible voters do not vote. Well, you got to figure out, okay, what's the problem? Well, it's because they got nobody to vote for. So let's open this up. Let's level the playing field. Let people from all political ideologies come into this game, and we'll see an energized and mobilized electorate for a change, I think.
Okay, with that, folks, I see I only have about 2 minutes and 30 seconds left. Of course, I can do
that. Happen?
Record.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, recording time. I can't put this in the recording time for the benefit of the people who will listen to it later on archives, as of people who are listening live. If you'd like to go to the show and listen to the last part that is going to be in recording, because I have a feeling we will not make it to be done in the next 2 minutes, so we will go into recording time tonight. But before this, so live, I'd like to give 30 seconds to each one of the either hosts or page owners of the group to kind of promote what they got. First, we will start with Randy and then Rex, and then we'll go to Brian, and then we will go to Chris. So let's go in that order.
Hey, because I've taken so much time of your time before now, I concede the rest of my time to the other gentlemen.
Okay. I assume he means me, and all I've got to say is join Tex and Rex tomorrow night at 11 p.m. Eastern Time to discuss the presidential duopoly show, which most people refer to as a debate. So see you tomorrow night at 11 p.m.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity to be on your show, and the only plug I put for my show is basically my goal is I'm trying to reach out to my community and overcome misconceptions on evolution and empower my community by encouraging them to ask questions about alternative explanations.
When is the show? What's the name of it?
It's called Understanding Evolution, and I have multiple different shows I do, but that's the main premise of the show.
Okay, and is there any particular night, or is it just –
Oh, yeah, sorry. Usually Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, every Monday. Next Monday's show will be on whale evolution and animal behavior.
Okay, and Chris?
Wednesday, I do believe that we have Randy and Kelly coming on to do a show where we're going to break down the Constitution Party platform. And Kelly's going to take the position of Ron Paul and go down through this thing and find the similarities and differences between Dr. Ron Paul and his philosophies and the Constitution Party.
Okay, great. And I see we are only at 5 seconds live, so thank everyone and have a good night. We are now in recording, so if anyone else wants to chime in or say anything,
yeah.
So for the benefit of the archive listeners, go ahead.
I wanted to add something to the gentleman because he asked the third party question, which is our favorite topic, or one of our favorite topics, but it seems to be. But the other thing you have to realize is our numbers are, for people who have left the parties, are at least 40%, if not 42%, depending on who you listen to. So that means more and more and more people are discouraged with the parties. And the greatest number of people filling that independent void are Republicans. They're down around 20% now. And so they are bleeding fast, and they're bleeding because they don't stand on the principles that they espouse to. You know, they claim their, you know, God, country, pro-family, you know, rule of law, Bill of Rights, and then they go in there and they do the opposite of what they claim they are. And so they're bleeding bad. And McCain knocked him down about 7-8%, and Romney's going to probably knock him down another 4-6%. And those people are either independents. Now, independents is a classification that also includes third parties. I think that you're going to see the greatest migration to third parties in the history of this country. And also, huge numbers of Ron Paul people are looking, you know, for places to reside now that the Republican Party is just basically, through crime and fraud, coercion, broken bones, and whatever else you want to add to that list, hundreds and hundreds of cases of abuse through this whole primary. Some will choose to stay and fight, but many are choosing to go somewhere else, saying you don't want our money, you don't want our vote, you don't want the youth, you don't want the future leaders of politics in your party, then we're going somewhere else. So it's going to be interesting to see over the next 2 years going into midterms what is going to happen. But I would assume that these third parties, especially the top two tiers, are going to swell by millions of people. I'm done.
No. Oh, I'm here. Yes, if anyone else would like to chime in, go ahead.
I missed the last part of it. My apologies. I got distracted.
No, I just said if anyone else would like to chime in. I was kind of fiddling here with my headset, unplugging the charger, so I might have missed something as well, so go ahead.
Just something that I thought I would add is that for our new guy out there, I'm sorry I didn't catch your name, but my name's Randy Stufflebeam, and I am the National Vice Chairman of the Constitution Party. And I am also on the board of directors of the group Free and Equal, who is the host of the real presidential debate, the debate that is going to be hosted and aired on October the 23rd, and the only presidential candidates who have accepted that can actually get enough electors to get elected is the four what's we've been calling third party candidates. And even though I am the national vice chairman and I have certainly a strong bias towards the Constitution Party, I also have a strong desire to level the playing field, and that's to bring all of these additional parties on board. I was a Marine for 22 and a half years, and I fought for the right to be represented. I fought for our Constitution, which institutes the principles of representation. And the two-party duopoly has destroyed that. And so this is why, as a chairman of the party and a vice chairman of the party, why I can be so strong about bringing all these other parties on board, because we need this, because when talking about that discussion about the quality of the product and the price, well, you know, we keep fighting about this issue of corruption, and you know, and the problem is corruption is never going to be able to be battled until we can destroy that duopoly that controls everything. Once we can start bringing in competition, then that actually, that corruption will actually disappear out of necessity if people want to get reelected. And so it's important to understand all of these dynamics and how important it is that they all work together. And that's why I really appreciate what you know, Bards is doing, and of course Sammy on Constitution Unite, Conservatives Unite, and Tex and Rex on their show. And you know, I don't know, and I've been wanting to ask this, Tex, which came for, I mean, did you guys start using that word duopoly before you heard of me?
Who are you again?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, duopoly is a term that both Tex and I have been familiar with for a long time. It stems predominantly from our understanding of the Austrian School of Economics. So, but you know, if you want to coin it, feel free. Just as long as you don't charge me for using it.
You know, but the point is, if it wasn't, you know, if you had this, how strong this connection is. I mean, we're using these, we understand these principles so succinctly. You know, it's just amazing. And like Chris said, how have we not met, you know, months and months and months ago? And so, just for our listeners out there, how important all of these things connecting really is.
Well, I think the fact is that truth always unites, and the reason that most of us hadn't heard of each other is because we're not supposed to. The only reason duopoly exists is because it keeps those of us who know the game separated, so that we think that we're the only one who might think that they're crazy because no one else seems to think it. But the fact is that I would argue that the majority of Americans, although they may not be able to articulate it, are completely aware of this, but they are still surrounded by other people who won't express it. And the thing is that if you're thinking something and the other guy's thinking something, but neither one of you will talk about it to each other, then you'll both think that the other one doesn't think it. And what we've done is we've broken through that barrier, you know, with social media, with Blog Talk Radio, and that's one of the reasons why the duopoly is now working very hard to make sure that those systems are controlled to keep us separated, because if we get together and, you know, it's sort of like in the movie Spartacus, you know, don't let the slaves know, you know, wear anything to identify them as slaves, because if they all got together and, you know, if they all wore something to identify them as slaves, whether it is a yellow Star of David on their lapel or a white armband around their upper arm or something like that, then they might actually realize how many of them there are, and then the game would be over.
And by the way, this is Brian Taft, i.e. Tiktaalik 27. The duopoly concept's interesting. It sounds a little similar to an oligopoly. Where would you say would be the defining difference between a duopoly and an oligopoly?
I don't think that there is a difference. The fact is that duopoly is what's been working because they've been feeding us this two-party system, but it's the same thing. I mean, basically, okay, the oligarchs are the ones that have put forward this sham of a duopoly. I mean, a duopoly isn't a governmental system. This is either an oligarchy or a plutocracy. It's basically a corporatist dictatorship. Duopoly is just a method that they use to keep us voting against our own interests with the you know, false sense of choice.
Hey, Rex, but let me answer that a little differently, though, because I believe the difference is with just the two parties, they are able to exert a huge amount of control. When you've got more parties that, are, for instance, the Constitution Party will not take corporate funding, okay? So when you've got these parties that are not controlled and in that infrastructure, then you've got parties that can pull away and actually add voice outside the control. So what you've got to understand is the difference in control. That's what's really important here, is because who can control? Could they possibly control an I can't even say it now. But multiple parties, and I would suggest to you, because of our principles and where we stand and the various parties that would attack this, I would say suggest that control would be virtually eliminated.
Yeah, that makes sense. I agree with what you're saying. They're basically the duopoly is basically the mechanics, if you will, to achieve the oligopoly. It's the way they kind of go through the processing to pull it off.
Yeah, for now. I mean, they could easily make it a triopoly, you know, and perhaps that might be what they're doing. I mean, I'm not saying that for a fact, but it is entirely possible that they throw up a third party that's just as bad a choice, and then you're left with the lesser of three evils. You know, the issue is that as long as there is a corporate elite that is in control of the flow of information by owning most of the media outlets, and the fact that people are misinformed and willing to go along with something that they actually articulate that they are against, but they prefer it to the other option, considering that the other option is in some manner of degree worse, then this will continue with any number of parties. The issue is that you have to move away from voting for lesser or greater degree of something and look at things of a different kind. And if you don't have constitutionalists, and they don't necessarily have to be conservative constitutionalists. I mean, you know, there are some other ideas that maybe we don't agree with in principle, but that would live within the, quote, libertarian or by 19th century standards, liberal framework of the Constitution, then the debate is in the right place. But right now, the choices that we're given are all extra constitutional, and we're given this false impression that we're picking some manner of lesser degree of evil, when in fact what we need is a different kind of candidate as opposed to a lesser degree of the same crap we've been getting.
Playing devil's advocate again, then, do you feel then at this point in time we're too far into the game where we have to make a choice? Because my big concern is that the current choice of, i.e., the president, is, as you say, it's, you know, you're basically picking between the lesser of two evils, but it sounds like having Obama reelected would be insurmountably more destructive than even Romney, even if he himself
Well, if we're going to play devil's advocate, I would argue that actually, and I'm not advocating this at all because I frankly think Obama is absolutely terrible and might actually be the end of the United States, but I also feel the same way about Romney. The difference is that I know for a fact that Obama's term is going to be up in 4. Romney might actually be given 8 years. So I think that if you know, I don't know how you do the calculus of what's the lesser evil. They're both evil, so I'm not going to participate either way. But the fact is that what would be the preferable evil choice if you had to settle for one? I would take the one that has the lower duration.
See, my concern is, though, in terms of the fiscal cliff, if Congress basically keeps, either if they don't keep the can down the street further and they allow the JECTRA and ECTRA acts to both expire come January, that we're going to see a massive increase in taxation across the country. And if Obama is reelected, my concern is that's basically an inevitability. Whereas if Romney is elected, at least there's a potential that the fiscal cliff will not happen. We won't all fall off and crash and burn.
Well, see, but that's up to the Congress, not to the president, and neither one of them will veto any of the spending bills. So it's really a moot point. I mean,
right now under the control of the Republicans,
right?
Because it's supposed to start with the representative.
Yeah, you need a Congress with balls. You need a Congress with balls that's actually going to do the right thing, and then they can force the president to do it. The fact is that the president really isn't as powerful as we assume he is. There's a lot of assumed powers the president has, which Congress could check in just about, you know, three strokes of a pen. So it really is a congressional problem. So it doesn't really matter if it's Obama or Romney. Whatever Congress is going to allow to happen because the corporate masters have told them to do it, that's what's going to happen. So the idea that Romney's somehow going to veto a terrible spending bill by Congress is just, you know, you might as well believe in unicorns.
Well, take, you know, the Bush presidency, for example, when he had a Republican-controlled Congress and the unconstitutional things that he was able to perpetrate upon the American upon all of us Americans under that regime. So, you know, when you start talking about what's more evil, you know, would it be more evil to have Romney with a Republican-controlled Congress or Obama with a Republican-controlled Congress? You know, I mean, when you start hammering that out, while certainly he's still going to be able to achieve some things, you know, at least there would be some facade of the Republicans taking exception to what Obama's trying to do.
Now, see, I'm of the firm belief, however, that Obamacare is going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back. And, you know, it seems like the only probability, the only chance we have now of overturning that is if, unfortunately, the conservative
state. I have a question for you. Obama, first of all, Romney created Obamacare. Second of all, Republicans just funded it. So what makes you think anybody's going to stop it?
Good point.
See, that,
although, isn't that
that's the problem. That's the challenge. Let me give you this because I've been listening for a while. But let me give you this other key paradigm. For 2 years, Republicans have been in control of the House and the purse strings. They have handed Obama everything he wanted while acting like they didn't like it. So the question is, do you really think you could trust Romney with his liberal record in Massachusetts with a Republican House who has already proven that they will give Obama, the liberal Marxist, anything he wants? That's a pretty scary proposition for the next 8 years. Maybe it needs to crash. I don't know. You know, like Rex said, that's not one I can totally debate. I just can throw the numbers out there.
Well, and the other thing is you have to realize that this isn't an issue of which one of them will do less harm. It's an issue of the paradigm that we've essentially been brainwashed into believing is our only choice. And the fact is you have to ask yourself, even though it fizzled out, there was a strong resistance in the Tea Party movement. And you have to ask yourself a very important question. Had McCain won in 2008, odds are that the policies that we see now would be exactly the same ones that we have with Obama if McCain was president. But the question is, would the Tea Party have risen up to protest, or would they have just accepted it because it was put forth by a military hero who happens to be a Republican?
Do you think McCain would have put out a socialized health care?
Yeah, I mean, it may not quite be Obamacare, but it would have been pretty close because look at it this way, right? The Iraq War, which everybody blames on Bush, that was authorized by Clinton. You see, the fact is that the policies are put in place by people who are not elected, and it's the people who are elected who actually go along with it. So the question you have to ask yourself is, are you electing people who will actually legislate, or are you electing people who will do whatever their corporate masters tell them to do? And the idea of that these parties have different positions is a complete deceit that we've all bought into. The evidence suggests otherwise. I mean, if you err in the same direction for 40 years, barring Reagan and Gingrich, okay, but if the party errs in the same direction for 40 years consistently, that's not a matter of considering that it's a mistake or they made a screw up here and there. That's clearly intentional. And with what Boehner did and what Romney did at the convention indicates that they are willing to lie, steal, and cheat and pretend that everything is copacetic in order to get their agenda put forth. How can we trust them to do anything that they say when they speak conservative to the rest of us?
Yeah, great question. Guess it depends on the lobbyist groups. They seem to be heavily in the position of power as well.
Well, it's not. You know what? I'll tell you this. It's not the lobbyists, because they really don't have power unless the people we elect are willing to cave in and give it to them. If we elect, I mean, look at Ron Paul. He never gave in to that. Now, you know, so he's a lone voice crying in the wilderness. Well, maybe if we had 100 of him, then the lobbyists wouldn't have any power. So it's not the issue of the lobbyists. It's an issue of the politicians who are the ones who are passing these bills that go along with them. You know, well, this 3,000-page bill, who has time to read it? They just told me to sign off on it, so I did. You know, Ms. Pelosi, where in the Constitution does it give you the power to do anything you're doing? Are you serious? Are you serious? Yes, lady, I'm friggin' serious. The Constitution is the supreme law of the land. That's what you took an oath to. So it's about electing people who are actually going to do the job that they've been elected to do, as opposed to electing rubber stamps for the corporatists. And that's what it takes. And the fact is, as long as we are willing to play the game of picking one of their corporatist candidates or the other one, and that's not only for POTUS, that's for all the down ballot as well, as long as we're willing to play that game, they're never going to change. They might tinker around the edges, you know. We're gonna reduce Medicare by 10% in order to create a voucher system for the preferred insurance companies and help them eliminate their competition, or we're going to cut Medicare by 10% to fund Obamacare. Either way, you can't survive by cutting Medicare by 10%, and neither one of those solutions is going to work. So it's just a minor rhetorical difference of tinkering. It isn't an issue, any fundamental political differences. They don't have them. And so we keep buying into the rhetorical bullshit that they keep feeding us, and we keep electing them. And unless we stop, and if we don't stop now, we might never be able to stop, because then it just becomes pointless, because they will be so entrenched that it will just be over.
It's a political proverbial chicken and the egg, I guess. So. Mm-hmm. But, I agree with you guys. My concern is, can it at this stage in the game, can we really reverse course? And
I love the concept of the multi-party system, though.
Well, we can reverse course. It's not going to happen in this election, but the fact is if you don't do it now, if you don't take the angst that's going on in this election to at least start giving a tilt towards multi-parties, it's going to tilt too far over to ever be able to do it. So it's not a matter of winning the presidency. I mean, let's face it, the statistical likelihood of Virgil Gude or Gary Johnson or Ron Paul winning the presidency is close to zero. But that doesn't mean that you do some kind of pragmatic calculus and say, well, then if those guys are going to lose, I might as well participate with the evil that's being perpetrated so that I can continue the delusion. You just step outside of it. And the fact is, well, then I'm wasting my vote. Well, but aren't you wasting your vote by voting for the very system that is actually enslaving you? At least if you step out, you will lead others to say, hey, you know what? He did it in the last election. I wish I had. Maybe I can do it in 2014. Maybe I can do it in 2016.
Well, also, let me chime in with this, is also if your, you know, party such as the Constitution Party were to get 5%, it would make it much easier for them to get ballot access for, you know, other election, upcoming elections such as 2014 and 16.
Yep.
Yep, that's very important.
So the vote is actually going towards something. Go ahead, Ren.
I was just going to ask you guys, any thoughts or feelings on how a person like myself can participate in the movement to get these types of things enacted?
Sure. You can start by voting for them.
I like them.
Well,
maybe throw them some money.
Well, and I do know that there is, you could get literature and even signs from here in Ohio, because you said you're in Cincinnati, so I know you're in Ohio. Actually, we interviewed Don Schrader, who is the party chairman of the Constitution Party for Ohio. And if you just look up the Constitution Party's website and get a hold of Mr. Schrader, he could probably get you some literature as well as a sign as well.
I may check that out. Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, gentlemen, it is
Well, that was an interesting show there, Robert.
Well, thank you. I'll just have to tweak the description for the archives because people may read that, and then as they're listening to the show, might get a little confused, like, am I listening to the same show? But that's okay. that's part of the organic nature of the show.
Boy, Adam, that's your description on there, evolution rules.
By the way,
just
talking about the label that was supposed to be talked about, or at least what Chris had every intention of trying to direct us down, you know, that document that, you know, 35 reasons. Well, you know, I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, you know, because they're dealing with a lot of what Obama has done as a president, or the supposedly stuff that he's done as president that would be different than Romney would do as president. I think I'm going to come up and I'm going to start working first thing in the morning on a new list of 35 reasons why voting for either Romney or Obama would make you a traitor.
Very good. Well, you know, the thing I was going down through it when you guys got off and spun into the abortion issue real strong, I was reading them and kind of playing around with the document, and I realized a lot of the answer is, I don't even know what Romney's position on this is, or based on his record in Massachusetts, he has the exact same permit, you know, position. So there were several things that, you know, I was just kind of answering in my mind as you guys were talking, going, somebody's got the wool pulled over people's eyes about what his positions are or what he's going to do. And just like the economic or the Fed or any of that, he hadn't said anything about that except that he likes Bernanke, you know, who just gave us QE infinity, which means the federal government will own all the mortgage-backed real estate in the country in a few short years.
Well, that's, you know, how Obama won last time. That's how Obama won last time. If you really want to know what Romney's positions are, just ask George Soros.
Yeah, and we still haven't gone into that Middle East conversation that was in that video, what that guy uncovered. That was pretty interesting. So we got
Then Bart's right. Bar's Logic has no shortage of topics for the next 2 weeks.
No, that's for certain. That's for certain. That's definitely something we can discuss, of course, continue tomorrow night, as well as some of the things we're going to talk about tonight in the Middle East, and then perhaps if Randy would like to come in and read his 35 reasons on how it would be unpatriotic to vote for Romney or he said traitor. I guess I put up patriotic. To vote for Romney or Obama.
To do that.
Great.
Yep, and I'm probably going to have to rely a little bit on Chris. I think we might have to work out a couple of these things, but because I know he said he's got some a document or a couple of things regarding some of this information. So we'll get it out.
No, what I did was I threw it in the file and just broke it up so it can be typed into. You know what
Fantastic.
I'm saying? I haven't really done anything with it. We started talking, and then we got on one topic, and then we ended up, you know, around the world again. And so I just kind of walked away. But anyway, you guys want to go and take Sammy's show, you know, around the world a couple times?
You'll never know what hit him.
Yeah, Dan was in chat going, I'm not going over there by myself. I said, go ahead, we'll be there in a minute.
Something maybe discuss in the future. I'm going to be dropping off here, but I'd love to hear a discussion on the petrodollar. Petrodollar.
What you want to talk to Dan?
What petrodollar?
Yeah, really. I actually have a list. I have a list of all the trade agreements that China has with everybody in the world that no longer uses U.S. dollars, and they just announced a program where everything is in place, all the banking, all the computers, whatever it takes to set this up, and they have invited any country in the world who produces oil that they can now trade using the China dollar, and they have deals, and I've got that whole list, and I've read it off multiple times, including at the, I don't know if at the beginning of the show, but, you know, it's a big issue. It's you know, we're talking about South Africa, we're talking about China and India, China and Japan, China and Brazil, China and this, China and that, and China and Russia. Russia's going to supply them oil. All these deals, India, all these trade deals will no longer use the U.S. dollar. We just all watched a video the other day from a gentleman who was explaining all this, said basically trillions of U.S. dollars that used to be used in trade deals, including oil dollars, are going to come flooding back to America in the next 6 to 8 months, and hold on to your hat when that happens.
Yep, that's correct. I'm a financial planner, so that is definitely something that's big of my concern, is who's going to absorb our inflation.
Yeah, well, there's a great video, and I don't know what you think of Alex on InfoWars, but he interviewed a guy who's got some pretty high-up people that he gets information from, this guy Lindsay, who's been doing this stuff for multiple years. He gets into this really deep, and when you're done with the video, I think you have, like, that kind of shock where you go, oh, my God, because it touches a little bit of everything I think most of us believe we understand, but this guy really gets into it in depth, including the wars in the Middle East and what's going on,
yeah,
and who's really behind it and what the next three or four moves are going to be. He covers it in extreme detail, and it kind of, if you can go to sleep that night after that without taking four or five shots, good luck.
Well, if it isn't the first time you've heard it, you can, because you're already used to
yeah.
it. And the fact is that if you're doing any kind of financial planning, I mean, the only options you've got are precious metals and contracts. Everything else is going to be worth nothing.
And tip.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. Well, let's go bug Sammy.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, for coming on and staying with us here on Bard's Logic Political Talk. Yeah, I'll be over at Sammy's a little bit later. I think I'm going to finally have some dinner before I do so. But thank you again, Randy, Brian, Rex, and Chris. Thank you all for listening to the extended edition of Bard's Logic Political Talk. And everyone have a good night and take care. And for myself, and if anyone who would still like to listen, I'd still like to end the show with the song from Aubrey Ashburn. And good night and take care.
Good night.
Thanks, guys.